Welcome to the Canadian HR Podcast. This is Alexander. Lauren, you're tuned in to episode number 2. Tisa Pfeffer is an immigrant from the former Yugoslavia, Serbia, raised in Guelph, Ontario, with an educational love of philosophy and human resources. She's been working in HR for 10 years with experience in automotive, furniture, fixture, fabrication, and software industries, both unionized and not, large and small. The majority of her experience is with non-unionized Ontario-based employment, but since 2017, she's been responsible for the full scope of HR compliance and operations for a global software company, including Ontario, Quebec, Nova Scotia, New Brunswick, Washington, Florida, Vermont, Scotland, UK, and France. Tisa, great to have you here with me.
Thank you, Alex. Happy to be here.
First question is, why? Why HR? Why did you choose a career in HR?
Well, to be very honest with you, a career in HR sort of chose me after a summer stint at the plant that my father was working at. I was asked to come back on contract, and I really fell in love with the career there. It's just been a real pleasure to be able to work with employees as well as management and making sure that the business and the company growth is balanced with what's good for the employees as well. I really see it as promoting a win-win situation, and I'm happy to make my life about it.
Do you have passion for all areas of HR? Is there anything in particular that really gets you going?
Well, I certainly do. Most of my career has been spent as a generalist. So I've always had a passion for kind of the full scope because I really see, you know, humans are dynamic and so is the profession. But I would say that I'm most passionate about learning and development because making a plan that's meaningful to the employee as well as adding value to the business has always been something that has really interested me. And I've always been a bit of a nerd in school. So I see the workplace as the adult version of schooling, where you can learn through making real contributions to society and being paid for it.
Of course, making contributions to society and being paid for it. I love that. It's not two things you actually hear together very often. Do you find that leadership is mostly on board with the well-being of employees? Do you hear nightmares, or do you hear that there's pretty much, well, a consensus amongst your peers that leadership's on board and HR gets the tools to really help their employees?
You know what? In my experience so far, and maybe I've been lucky, but anecdotally, certainly the leaders that I've dealt with have all been interested in, you know, promoting the well-being of the employee. And I think at the end of the day, we all just need to realize that we're all humans. And from a human perspective, you can usually get a leader to really see that, even if maybe they don't see it right away. So sometimes it takes a little bit more finessing. Sometimes you have to put it in terms of obviously costs and that return on investment that I was talking about. But in my experience, for the vast majority of leaders are very interested in the well-being of their employees because, I mean, that's who's going to execute for them, right? So a vision isn't very good without someone to execute.
I was just wondering about some of your habits in HR. Can you perhaps share with the listener some of the best habits that you've been able to develop that has really helped your career, Tisa?
Certainly, yeah. So I guess I would categorize this into my top two best habits. So the first one I would say is that I've always followed my natural curiosity about the nitty-gritty details of business operations. Whether it's automotive CNC processes, welding techniques, how to tell a good weld from a bad weld, or the software development lifecycle, I've always taken time to meet with each department head and learn about the specifics of their department's operations. And wherever possible, I've actually performed the work myself. So loading and unloading a machine just to see what it's like to be the employee for some time and just to see the practical side of their day. I think it's really important to learn the lingo and to know what it means to do the work that you're hiring people to do. So you have to be able to recognize when there's good or bad performance, or to know why a developer who's familiar with a certain language like CSS might not be able to cover for a C++ developer, but maybe they might be able to cover for someone working on an HTML project. This kind of stuff doesn't just allow you to gain a deeper understanding of the business's needs and hire the right person to do the job, but will also help you gain the respect of department managers and senior management. So this includes IT professionals and things and more specialized technical roles where it takes some skill, where you're going to have to translate the HR lingo to business speak so that those managers and senior management can see the value of the HR activity. And then I would say that my the second best habit, or not second because of the order, but just one of the two, is I really get excited about leveraging technology, and especially Microsoft technology, because I've worked with that the most and actually exclusively since the beginning of my career. And my best advice in that respect would be not to be afraid of that. I taught myself how to use Microsoft Excel, Access, which is a database builder, and SharePoint, and I've built everything from vacation and leave trackers to a small functional HRIS database using free resources online. You'd be surprised at how easy it is to become an Excel guru. I have not once taken a course, and I've been regarded as the resident expert for Excel by leaders from all the companies I've worked with.
You did send me an Excel cheat sheet. Is this what you use? Is like the whole process of creating an HRIS system? I mean, how long did that take? And I guess you started with these type of tools like cheat sheets and.
Yeah. So when I created the HRIS system, it was when I first started with the software company. There was information about employees kind of scattered over three different drives. I had to pull it all together. And we really wanted to have a spot where we could have a look at, say, a specific employee's salary history. So I knew that I could leverage a database to do this. I just didn't know exactly how. So what I did was I went online and I just started with the basics, the tutorials. I learned what, a query is. I learned what, a table is and how they interact and what you do to run reports and to make forms and everything. So it all comes, you have to build it yourself, but you can do it from the links in that, in the Excel sheet that I've provided. I can't say that I use it on a daily basis, but I have started to kind of memorize these shortcuts and things that just make my day so much easier as I'm working with these programs. And it's easy to do a quick search for something that you're looking to do, like pasting just the values of something you've copied into Excel. So that's the kind of thing that sheet will help you with. And there are also some links in there that take you to training courses from Microsoft. So you know that they're usually up to date with whatever's new and out there. And it'll give you short little tutorials. There are videos on all things from Excel formulas to pivot tables. The only thing I couldn't find on there really was information on macros. But you can download templates that will teach you by doing as well. And I really recommend those because those I found very helpful.
Well, I'll put it on the show notes, which can be found at s-hr.ca/TISA, T-I-S-A. Boy, you sure must love learning because you taught yourself all of that. And then you got into technology and you learned all the lingo. And, you know, I'm still learning technology. I've been recruiting in technology for so long. There must be a real dedication and big time commitment. Is there not to really get all this?
Absolutely. I am not going to lie. I am still a nerd, so I tend to spend my weekends or off time looking at this stuff. But to be very honest with you, I found that, you know, if you just learn about the basics and you see what the capabilities of these systems are, it's very easy to get excited about learning more. And then before you know it, you know, 4 or 5 hours have passed and you're making your own database. Wow. So it's worth it. I highly recommend at least giving it a shot at the beginning.
Okay, so I should be asking you about COVID-19. Are you tired of this subject of COVID-19 by chance?
Oh, no, I have to revisit this subject every day, Alex. So I am happy to chat about it a bit more. I'm certain this will not be the last time I speak about it either.
So like how has it affected you?
Well, for me, as I mentioned, I do work for a global company. So all of those regions that you listed at the beginning of the podcast, myself and one other person in the HR department, who is my new boss, shout out to her for being an awesome boss, by the way. That's Marie-Michelle. We've been tackling it together, but of course there have been some challenges on the global front. As of earlier in March, we did make the decision to have all employees working from home globally, and the situation's been evolving daily. It's been a bit of a struggle to keep up with the new government programs introduced. There are quite a few of the different ones. For example, in the UK, there's a new furlough concept. France, Canada, Quebec, USA, they've all introduced new programs that employers and employees can leverage. However, navigating those programs and their interactions with labor standards in these regions has definitely proven to be a challenge, because a lot of the governing bodies and the organizations that are responsible to give some guidance on these standards have been trying to catch up themselves. So you can imagine that it's definitely been updating yourself every day. I have a few links I can provide you with for each of the regions that I've been checking every day that give me a good summary of them. But yeah, what we've done kind of in terms of trying to keep everyone together, even though that there are some employees, you know, obviously feeling very isolated. We've been holding regular all employee meetings to keep employees informed of the situation. We've prepared questions and answers with guidance by region for the employees that are affected by any layoffs or other temporary status changes. We've been keeping a pulse on wellness using some surveys, one of which I will share the results of as well. And arranging a virtual happy hour on Fridays to maintain a sense of community and camaraderie. And that's something we actually plan to continue indefinitely, because we found it's a really great way to connect with remote employees and for those at other offices. We've also created a central COVID-19 SharePoint site where there's important health updates. We shared some fun pictures of working from home arrangements and decorations, things like that. And of course, we're also trying to keep in touch with those who are currently off work, check in every couple of weeks just to see how they're doing and, you know, make sure we're answering them as soon as possible. And part of the last survey that I did want to share with you and with everyone, just because it highlights a couple of the more common things that employees are struggling with the most while they're working from home, and it might apply to a few different organizations. The number one thing that was reported is social isolation. So unsurprisingly, everyone is struggling with not having their usual social life and family and friends around. The other thing they were struggling with is communications with their team. It's been a little bit difficult. You might have found that some of the technology has been failing us. There's been a lot of traffic going through. Maybe the bandwidth isn't there. Lots of different connectivity issues that way. And then the third top thing, I guess I'll share the fourth as well because it's funny. The third top is just general anxiety related to COVID and kids at home. That's another hot topic issue with us. Fortunately, since we work for a software company, we're able to have a bit more flexibility in our schedule. But certainly for other employees who need to be, you know, on a clock at a certain time, that can prove to be a challenge in itself.
So do you think that some of the things you're doing, like the happy hour, do you suspect that it's making a bit of a difference?
I honestly do not only suspect it, I lived the difference that it makes. They have actually been hosting this happy hour for themselves, just as a team on a regular basis on Fridays. And just last week, I joined for the first one for myself. And I have found that it really boosted my, you know, I was happy. It really boosted my mood. I was a lot happier just from talking to them. And, you know, after hanging up, it just changed my mood for that day and also for a couple of days after. I found some real value in it. And I know that because the employees keep coming back to it, of course, they're absolutely finding value in it as well.
Boy, it's certainly a challenge to work from home, especially if you don't have the experience in doing it. It's pretty hard to keep a schedule. All the distractions. I know that when I work from home, I like to move furniture. Not quite sure why. I think all of your neuroticisms, they all come out when you're stuck at home. Do you suppose that this might eventually create a lot of employees who are going to request to work at home when they originally didn't?
I certainly think everyone's situation is different. So I certainly think there are some employees who might find that working from home is preferable and that they might want to keep doing that. And to be honest, depending on the function, as I said, you always have to balance the needs of the business with the needs of the employee. So I believe that we would look at that depending on what their function is, on whether it's feasible, and we could possibly continue it into the.
You mentioned anxiety. How I just wonder how an organization can approach the anxiety aspect, like maybe regular meditations, online Zoom meditation sessions. Any ideas?
Well, with that, for us specifically, we have an employee assistance program, and we also have that for anybody who's, you know, experiencing just kind of general anxiety about life. But we also have the COVID SharePoint, which I think we're regularly updating to give them kind of the current situation. And as long as, as long as there is an update to be shared, as long as things are changing, I feel like that will signal enough to employees and just people in general that we're moving forward. Whether that be in a positive or a negative way, we're moving forward. We're going to move on to something. So in terms of kind of calming the anxiety right now, I don't think there's much employers can do, but in terms of, you know, meditation or virtual yoga or anything that can kind of help you escape just a little bit, that would end up also being good for your health in terms of like physical health and mental well-being, I would absolutely recommend to do that. And there are lots of different options online and offerings, thankfully, at this time, from different organizations.
Do you think, Tisa, that this whole experience, the experience that you're getting, will benefit you down the road?
Yes, I definitely do. On a personal level, I think that it has definitely taught me to be a little more grateful for the little everyday things. And in terms of professional growth, I would say that I've really learned to put an emphasis on agility and making decisions when things are kind of uncertain, still making sure something's moving forward and that you're able to switch it on a dime if you need to change your direction, but that you're moving forward kind of in the general direction of growth. I think that's something I'm going to take away and kind of keep close to my heart going forward, because the world's going to change and we don't know it. We didn't see this coming, so we won't see the next thing coming. May as well just be prepared for anything that's coming.
Just to go back to the survey that you mentioned, social life, communication, anxiety, kids at home, you know, people are working at home, they're having a lot of struggles, and you're hearing about it. How do you maintain your happiness? How do you maintain your enthusiasm? Do you have anything you can share with the listener who might be struggling to balance?
To be very frank, it has been difficult to be enthusiastic or excited about anything, just from everything that's going on. And I'm sure that a lot of people are feeling that. The way that I keep my enthusiasm is that I remember I need to be strong for these people. That these people are my teammates, and that they are, at the end of the day, my family at work. And that if they were my family in real life, I would do everything I could to support them and make them feel like everything's going to be okay. And I think as long as we all focus as leaders, and we need to remember that no matter what level of HR you're at, you are a part of the leadership team. Your actions matter. You want to model the behavior that you want to see in your employees as well as your leadership. And I think it's important that we view these people as humans who, if somebody can kind of keep that enthusiasm and show them that enthusiasm is possible, that for them, it might truly motivate them to get to that state as well.
You said a lot of beautiful things there. It almost makes me think that you should print it out and read it every day before you open your laptop or your computer. HR warrior.
I think you're right. Yes, absolutely.
Are you ready for the rapid fire HR challenge, Tisa?
I hope so. Oh my God, all of my insecurities are about to be exposed here. No, I'm just
going. Okay, so. I have 15 questions pertaining to HR. You're going to have 60 seconds to answer as many questions as possible. If you don't have an answer or you want to skip a question, simply say pass. So I'm putting 60 seconds on the clock. The clock will begin after I finish reading the first question. Are you ready?
I hope so.
True or false, the human resources field began in pre-industrial times?
Ooh, I'm going to go with false.
Give me one example of a fringe benefit.
Gym membership coverage.
What was the estimated average weekly hours worked in manufacturing in 1880? 40, 50, or 60 hours a week?
60.
True or false, should I pass on a candidate if they don't follow up with a thank you letter?
False.
Asbestos, mold, radiation, or nagging, which one is not considered a health hazard in the workplace?
Nagging? Although that might be debatable, but go on.
True or false, the health and safety at work prevention starts here poster is required in the workplace in Ontario.
True.
Who was the human resources representative at Dunder Mifflin in Scranton, Pennsylvania?
Oh no. Ted, Todd, something with a T.
Oh, go on. Very close, very close. Okay, your time is up. The buzzer went off already. But
Toby! It was Toby!
You got it. You got it.
I knew it was with a T.
Toby Flenderson.
I should get it because I... Yes, that's right. And I should get it because I'm going to do a quick shout out to my colleague, Roa, who constantly likes to compare me to Toby and how awesome I am, obviously, in light of him.
Well, very good. Very good. What'd you get? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Excellent. You are the grand champion thus far. Okay. Hold on. I better.
Oh, great.
Let me check here. Okay. So what you said 60 hours a week, estimated average weekly work hours in manufacturing, 1880. And yes, it was 60.7. Isn't that crazy? 60 hours a week.
It is, but thankfully that's why we have limits on that now. That's good.
Yeah. You are right. Nagging is not considered a health hazard. Very good. And your poster, true.
Although I may take a moment here.
Yes.
Under the Ontario Health and Safety Act.
Yeah.
Not nagging, but if it were harassment, in that case, yes, it is a workplace hazard.
Oh, okay. All right. All right. Well, thank you for playing my game. Thank you for indulging me.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Okay. Final question for you. I'm looking for some of your best advice. Can you share with the listener some of the best advice on HR challenges that you can give to a new or even an experienced HR professional?
Yeah, absolutely. So the first thing that I would say is always tailor the solution to the problem and put it in terms that a business person would understand. Always focus on the return on investment. Don't try to apply the textbook blindly in the workplace. HR best practices are best practices on average, and they may not work the way that you expect them to in every situation. So it's important to focus on the desired result, set goals specific to your organization's needs, ensure policies and practices align with labor standards, and that policies are applied consistently. Business leaders in general are familiar with and accept the benefits of most HR initiatives, but be prepared to break it down in terms of return on investment when pitching a proposal to management. The next piece of advice I would give is just believe in your ability to learn anything that excites you and do it. I'm speaking as someone who's completed a university degree and a college certificate program, and Google has been my best teacher. I am of the firm belief that I and everyone on this planet of Earth are equipped with the extraordinary ability to learn and adapt, and you do not need to become an expert in everything. You can learn enough to fulfill your objective and let go of the rest. I'm not an expert in SharePoint or workflows, yet I created and deployed a fully functioning automated leave approval and vacation calendar SharePoint late last year. I was excited about Office 365's capabilities and driven by a thirst for creating an automated system, and I Googled the rest. I have yet to find myself in a situation where I found a new technology that I'm interested in leveraging, and I wasn't able to learn enough about using it through tutorials and forums to teach or to reach my objective. I'm not a genius or gifted in any way. I'm just another capable human, and so are you. And the last piece that I'll leave you with is if after a few years you find yourself in a role where you've stopped learning and growing, don't be afraid to ask for more or to move on. Ask for it tactfully, though. Ultimatums are never a good idea. When you're first starting out, it's a good idea to stay in a position where you can learn from others who are making decisions. It's not about learning the right answer to a specific problem. It's about learning from leaders on how to make the decision. and what the process is that they go through to make sure that they arrive at the best decision. Get involved as much as possible without crossing confidentiality lines or going against the chain of command. It's true that the squeaky wheel gets the grease and that your manager will likely be overjoyed to have your help on some special project, but it's also true that the squeaky wheel gets replaced sometimes, so just be careful and act with tact. And remember, you've chosen a career which is needed across all industries. There is no shortage of opportunity out there if something isn't working out.
Love it. Love it. So learn, keep learning, never stop learning. If you're not challenged, ask for more. Don't be scared. Don't be afraid. Don't fear. And return on investment. Return on investment is quite interesting. I'm just curious. How did you learn on how to phrase that? It's almost like you have to have sales talk, don't you? If you're going to try to get leadership to understand the return on investment on their people or processes you want to put in for your people.
Certainly, yeah. And to be honest, I have picked up more and more as I've gotten more and more involved with, you know, management meetings over the years and things like that, more business level, more business level interactions where I get to learn from different departments. And I just found that there's some common language among all business people, and return on investment is something that everybody can get on board with, whether they're in finance or in sales or wherever. So return on investment is important, yes, but I do encourage you to make sure that you just have a look at the different types of ways that you can speak to the business itself and make HR ideas and best practices make sense to them.
Yeah. Yeah. In what common language, do you find that no matter what structure of the organization or what hierarchy of the organization with, you know, for people from like, you know, at the bottom of the org to the top, do you find that you have to learn actually multiple common languages?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
That's a good question. Yeah.
No, it's not at all. No, not at all. So in my old manufacturing life, I knew a surprising amount about, you know, the mechanical side of things. And you certainly have to, sometimes you have to put a certain concept in terms someone will understand, something that they work with in their daily life. I remember I was trying to explain how a certain tool worked at one of the manufacturing plants. And I was explaining it to someone who really understood how cars worked. So I told them that it moves like a differential, and they immediately understood what I was talking about. So that's not the same way. I'm sure that, do you understand what I'm saying there? Right? No. So exactly. So it depends on who you're talking to. You really have to know your audience. Yeah. By the way, look up a differential on a car. It's cool. Yeah. But or figure out how a car works. It's also cool. It's good to know that kind of stuff just in your daily life. But you certainly have to tailor the message to the audience. Otherwise, you're going to find yourself talking and no one's listening, or worse, they're listening and they're really struggling to understand.
Tisa, thanks again for joining me on the podcast.
Well, thanks again for having me, Alex. And likewise, you're awesome too. And wish you the best of success with this podcast. And I'll be sure to tune in as often as possible.
Yay, yay. Well, listener, that's the show. Don't go away, though. There's a micro podcast improv coming up next. Thank you for listening. Please feel free to reach out to me or Tisa, or we're both on LinkedIn. If you have any advice, any questions, or any feedback, I for sure would love to hear from you. So that's the rest of the podcast. No, there's a bonus. Take care of yourself. Thanks for listening, and goodbye for now.
My name is Sophia. I am 10 years old. My dad is Alexander. This is the Micro Podcast Improv. I wrote a whole bunch of words out, cut them up, and put them in a small box. Alexander will pick one. He told me that he doesn't cheat. And he and his guest will create a passion project micro podcast for 3 to 5 minutes. Enjoy this part of the show. Bye!
Hey, Tisa, good to see you. I got some, the water here is fresh. Have some water. You on your break, are you?
Oh, I am, absolutely. Thank you. I'm parched after all of this potato diet that I'm... Damn it, I screwed up now. I meant all of the potato meat.
No. But I overheard you in your cubicle. You were talking to Macy about this. You're just eating like potatoes. So I'm very fortunate to get this opportunity to talk to you. But why would you do such a thing?
Well, I've decided to follow the new potato diet, Alex. I mean, there's this whole new trend of all these elimination diets, and you know, you've got your carnivore diets and your different plant-based diets, and I found the potato to be a very versatile vegetable. So, hey, if a diet's going to tell me I'm going to be healthy with French fries, I'm happy to do it.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. You know, I've been considering like a radish diet. I don't know why, but I just love radishes.
That does seem a bit odd, but you know what? I bet you could fry those too. Guaranteed.
Fried a radish? Huh. Like the whole? You think I could just put a whole radish in there and... can I bread it? Like, so if you're on the potato diet, can you bread your potatoes? Or that would be cheating?
No, that's the thing. No, it's cheating because that's wheat now. You got to get rid of everything but potatoes.
Oh.
Even if you're growing even the plants inside your house, you're not allowed to grow house plants. You have to grow potatoes.
Oh.
Like, okay. It's like, it's almost like a religion and as well as a diet.
Now, I did overhear something about that. How long have you been growing potatoes in your dining room? And isn't that messy?
Well, the dining room operation, I just opened it up last week.
Oh.
But the basement operation has been going strong for the last 3 months. Nice. And I'm hoping to see a pretty good crop.
Nice.
Indoor potatoes.
Love indoor potatoes. I don't know if I've ever had indoor potatoes. I've had outdoor potatoes. Lots of those. Is there anything?
Have you ever tried to be a couch potato?
A couch potato? Of course. Of course. While eating potato chips. Like, what inspired you to grow potatoes in your basement? Did you read some sort of article that tells you that indoor potatoes in the basement are more nutritious?
Well, to be honest with you, Alex, I just wanted to make sure that my potatoes had adequate social distancing from all the other potatoes in the world. So I decided to bring the operation home. Yeah. I picked up on this a little bit early, you know, 3 months ago, and everything kind of started, and just thought I'd get all my ducks in a row, or potatoes in the basement, as I would say today.
Well, that's excellent. Because, you know, I think you can just live off of potatoes. I think you can eat potatoes all the time, every day. And, like, what do you do about the boredom of just eating potatoes all the time? Isn't that just get really boring?
Yeah. You get bored of it, you just make lots of different shapes.
Different shape potatoes. Huh. Interesting. Like, do you make, like, do you have a cookie cutter and make, like, bunny potatoes or heart potatoes?
Well, for Easter, certainly, some bunny ones and, you know, a couple of Easter eggs. Instead of hiding eggs this year, we hid potatoes. It turned out really well with the family. Yeah, definitely my go-tos are different animal shapes, and sometimes we make safaris out of them, and, you know, you just get creative with your food.
Oh, nice. Well, you know, this has been really enlightening. I'm glad that I spent my entire break talking to you about potatoes. Maybe before I go back to my desk, you can give me just a quick tip on how to really get inspired by a potato.
Well, the number one way to get inspired by a potato is to try and find one that looks like your favorite celebrity. I would say the number two way to get inspired by a potato, well, it's a little bit difficult now, but I would say have a really intense hot potato tournament set up. I don't know how you would assign to, like, get that done virtually these days, but yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, have a great day. See you later.
You too. See ya.